Topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
What's working on purpose anyway? Each week, we ponder the answer to this question. People ache for meaning and purpose at work, to contribute their talents passionately, and know their lives really matter. They crave being part of an organization that inspires them and helps them grow into realizing their highest potential. Business can be such a force for good in the world, elevating humanity. In our program, we provide guidance and inspiration to help usher in this world we all want, working on purpose. Now, here's your host, Dr. Elise Cortez.
Welcome back to the Working on Purpose program. Thanks for tuning in again this week. I'm your host, Dr. Elise Cortez, joining you live from Dallas, Texas, which is home base for me. If you've been tuning in for a while, you know this program is a thought leadership series that enlightens and inspires listeners with insights from distinguished business leaders and subject matter experts. Our conversations are designed to make you think, inspire you to reach ever higher for cultivating your best, and take an informed approach toward leadership and business. Today, we're going off track. I'm going to give you something very special, and we're going to really showcase purpose and passion. Our guest today is Barbara Altunian, a BBC-trained TV and radio interviewer with more than 30 years of experience. Today, among other ventures, she's the founder and trustee of The Hospice Biographers, a UK-based charity that trains and mentors specialist volunteers to record the life stories of patients across all the UK's 200 hospices. So far, they have recorded over 180 patient life stories and trained more than 30 hospices with the aim of expanding across the globe. We'll be taking this unique approach and hearing about Barbara's own unique story. Barbara, welcome to Working on Purpose.
Thank you very much.
I'm delighted to have you, and I want to thank Paul Skinner for sending you to me and alerting me to the amazing work that you're doing. And as I said in the introduction, Barbara, what I'd really like to do is I'd like to sort of reverse roles a little bit here and give our listeners just a taste. Mind you, I can't do it the same way that your biographers do, but give our listeners a taste of you sharing your story a bit like you might be doing inside hospice. So where do you want to start?
I would say you should start at the beginning.
I like it. Let's do it.
So I first thought about recording somebody's life story when my own father was diagnosed with a terminal illness when I was about to become a BBC news trainee. And I was told that he was going to die. And so my first inclination was to think about how I could preserve his life story. He was 65 and he had a thrilling life story, or that's what I thought anyway, being his daughter. And so I stole or borrowed permanently a radio recorder from my local BBC radio station, and I set about recording his life story. And first of all, he, my family, I've got a very large family. So I've got four brothers and sisters. My parents, my father is a Syrian English Anglo person, and my mum was German. So they had very different cultures. And we were living in a place called Cheshire in the north of England. And we spent a lot of our time in the Lake District. And what I said to my brothers and sisters was, look, Dad's dying. Shall I record his life story? And they all said, oh, God, Barbara, stop being such a nosy old beef. You know, I don't think you should be doing that. I should think you should just leave him to his own, you know, thoughts. And, you know, I think it's too intrusive and he's dying and you should leave him alone and stop being so nosy. And I said to my mum, you know, well, what do you think? And she said, nine, Barbara, nine. You know, this is much too intrusive, you know. And so I said, OK, well, let's solve the problem by asking Dad.
Brilliant.
See what he thinks, because I was a bit crushed by that point. I was only quite young, you know, I was in my 20s. And he said, oh, Barbara, that's a brilliant idea. That's a brilliant idea. He had a very posh English accent, even though he was Syrian. And I said, well, that's great, Dad. Well, fantastic. I'll go about and find an audio recorder. And so we got into a pattern of recording his life story in their lovely family home in Cheshire, a place called Wilmslow. And we would go into the dining room and we would go on a big dining room table And I'd put my tape recorder there and he'd open a bottle of wine. And in this recording, you could hear all the family ambience of our life there. You could hear my little sister Heidi coming in going, "Hey, Barbara, what are you doing?" And you could hear the doorbell going in the way that it does and the phone ringing and my mother coming in, "Buff Maxu here, handic fashion," and all that kind of stuff. And she would be interrupting. But it was really lovely because actually all this ambience and family noises was absolutely what tells a person's story. And obviously it's capturing a time in history. And I was, although I didn't realise it at the time, I was capturing, you know, a part of his life and my life. And I just set about, because I just studied philosophy and logic, actually. And I just thought, well, the most logical thing to do is to start at the beginning. So I had a huge, great big notebook. I had my tape recorder, which I'm putting on and off, thinking I'm never going to be able to record this. This is all going to go wrong. So I kept on checking it because I was so nervous about it. And we started recording. And he would always say at the beginning, "Oh, Barbara, there's not much to say. You know, I don't know what to say. You know, I say, "Oh, come on, Dad. So where were you born?" And he'd say, you know, "Well, I was born in Syria in a place called Aleppo. We used to have a hospital there named after our family, called the Altoonians, as you know." And he would start telling the story. And it was just brilliant. It was just wonderful because it told me so many things that I'd never have thought to ask. Because if you live with somebody and you're brought up with somebody, you don't suddenly stop and ask them, you know, what they felt about their parents or what it was that they did as a boy. And I found out all sorts of fascinating things about him. And I'd be always saying, "Dad, are you telling the truth? Is this all true? I'm just making it up." And he would say, "Of course, Barbara, of course." And he got up to all sorts of naughty things as a child. And he was living, you know, in this place called Aleppo, which is obviously destroyed now. But at the time, it was a very beautiful place. And he would describe what the house looked like and the hospital that they used to run. They used to run a hospital along Robin Hood lines, which probably won't mean anything to an American audience. But what it meant was that you would price the hell out of rich people for the sake of poor people. And so for poor people, their services were entirely free. Or they used to accept a goat or something in exchange for an operation. And my family ran it for four generations. And they ran it very, very successfully. And he told us a great story about how he saw some beggars in the street. And these beggars in the street were just ideal area for him to try and experiment on. Could he make the disabled child who'd been deliberately made a cripple for begging purposes, because such a large population in Syria were poor, it was their only way of surviving. And he said to the family, he being my father, Dr. Roger Altoonian, "Look, would you like to let us, you know, operate on him and make your son a healthy boy again?" And they all said yes at the time. And he told me how they did exactly that. They gave him first-class treatment. And after quite a long time, he made this boy, this poor boy, healthy again. And he had physio afterwards, after the operation. And he was able to walk again and assume a normal life. He was only very, very young, only about 9 or 10 years of age. And it was devastating for him as a young doctor. He'd been educated at Cambridge in England. And he had full of hope and, you know, was very excited about life, that he would be fine. This boy would be fine. But in fact, within a couple of months, when he went to go and visit the family again, they'd made the boy disabled again.
Oh, Barbara. Oh, heartbreaking.
I know. So, but, you know, I would never have found that out, that story. I would never have found that out had I not recorded his life story. And, go on.
I was just going to say, you know what I'm getting so present to, and I'm just delighted by this, is exactly what I wanted to share with you. I wanted to share you with the audience here, Barbara, because I really think the work that you're doing is profoundly important, and I do want to see it spread across the globe. I'm getting very present that those conversations that you and your father had in his last few days or weeks were probably some of the most profound of his existence and yours. And you learned things about him that you didn't know, and now you've got something, and that stands. There's a record that stands to share that with other people. It's incredible.
It is. And what one should also remember is that my brothers and sisters were so against it. He died only 2 weeks after I'd finished recording. And each of them said to me in a very quiet and chastened way, Bob, can I have a copy of the record? Only then did they realise the value of what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was only a little kid. You know, I was just in my early 20s. And it was just the best decision I'd made, because I had to postpone my training in order to do this recording with my father. So it was a very hasty decision on my part. But it was the best decision you could ever make. Because it was just fantastic.
And so that's where the idea came from, right? So that was many years ago. Yes.
He was the inspiration.
He was the inspiration. So there's another word for that, but I can't remember what it is. But anyway, that's not important. So now from here, where do you want to share your story? This is such a great way to start.
Well, the other thing, my father was a character in a book called Swallows and Amazons, which was a very famous classical English storybook at the time, an adventure storybook. And he told me lots of stories about what it was like to be characters in a famous English storybook when they were all living in Syria, basically. And that was very fascinating. And then the other fascinating thing about his life was that he then went on to become a doctor who became a self-experimenter and devised a drug for asthmatics, which I think lots of your listeners will probably be using. It's variously described. He discovered it in the 1960s, and it was called Ventolin or Intal. And it was the first drug treatment of its kind for asthmatics who'd hitherto been described really as lazy, work-shy individuals who were just kind of putting up on these chesty, horrible wheezes just to get out of work. And, you know, he did that on his own after being in secret, working away as a self-experimenter, inhaling all sorts of asthmatic-provoking attacks, he discovered this drug, and it was the reason why he was dying prematurely. So I got all that story in because I was recording him, and I was asking him the right questions, which is, okay, Dad, and what did you do next, and why did you do that? And, you know, just listening to him, really, and that's probably the most interesting thing you can learn out of the hospice biographer's story, is the value of listening to people, really listening, because the world moves so far and everyone's attention span is so truncated and reduced these days that the ability to listen before jumping to the next is a salutary tale for us all.
Yes, and to do so with extreme curiosity. I want to know. I want to know who you are, and I want to understand the life that you've led. How often does someone get a chance to share that?
Yeah, exactly. And also, the other thing is, we never realized at the time when we started, was that if you start recording somebody in the beginning, each 10 years that you record of them then informs them of their next 10 years. The brain works in a certain way where they say, oh, my God, Barbara, you've made me remember something I've completely forgotten. Aren't you clever? And I say to them all the time, no, I'm not clever at all. All I've done is I've done it in a sequence. I've done it chronologically. So it's the best way of recording anyone's life story, because they will be able to remember all the details, even if they're early dementia. They will remember all the details because the brain itself is very logical. If you skip it, they won't remember. So that was a great that's a great kind of thing that I discovered when I started doing it in earnest.
And on that note, that's a beautiful thing. Let's grab our first break. I want to be able to showcase the fact that you married philosophy and logic in this, Barbara. That is beautiful. I'm your host, Elise Cortez. We've been on the air with Barbara Altunian, founder and trustee of the Hospice Biographers, a UK-based charity that trains and mentors specialist volunteers to record the life stories of patients across all of the UK's 200 hospices. She joins us today from London. We've been talking a bit about what was her inspiration for starting the Hospice Biographers. After the break, we'll continue the conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Dr. Elise Cortez is a management consultant specializing in meaning and purpose, an inspirational speaker and author. She helps companies visioneer for greater purpose among stakeholders and develop purpose-inspired leadership and meaning-infused cultures that elevate fulfillment, performance, and commitment within the workforce. To learn more or to invite Elise to speak to your organization, please visit her at elisecortez.com. Let's talk about how to get your employees working on purpose. This is Working on Purpose with Dr. Elise Cortez. To reach our program today or to open a conversation with Elise, send an email to Elise, A-L-I-S-E, at elisecortez.com. Now, back to Working on Purpose.
Thanks for staying with us and welcome back to Working on Purpose. If you're just joining us, my guest is Barbara Altunian, a BBC-trained TV and radio interviewer with more than 30 years of experience. She's also the founder and the trustee of the Hospice Biographers, a UK-based charity that trains and mentors specialist volunteers to record the life stories of patients across all of the UK's 200 hospices, with plans to expand globally. I'm your host, Dr. Elise Cortez. So Barbara, from there, you've laid the foundation of where this fantastic idea came from. And of course, a story like that that's inspired from love and connection and respect is a beautiful thing to stand on, to start an organization like the Hospice Biographers. Where should we take the story next?
Well, I think what happened then was that I pursued, my father sadly died 2 weeks after I'd finished recording him. And I pursued a career in television with the BBC, and I eventually started my own television production company. And, you know, many years passed, but all the way through my television career, I kept on meeting people who would say, "Oh, Barbara, with a funny name, you record audio recordings of people's lives, don't you?" And I'd say, "Yes." And they'd say, "Oh, well, I've got a great mum," or I know somebody who lived around the corner who's got a great story to tell. So I would continue to do the life stories on audio of people who were rich and famous, downtrodden and the victims of injustice, ordinary people with fascinating stories, just by the by. You know, I didn't advertise, obviously. I had a full-time job. But people would kind of just hear about me through the grapevine. And then I carried on working in television. And then finally, we decided, my business partner and I, to give up our production company. And we sold it. And I decided to try and find some other way of kind of living in my life, as it were, but not doing television full time. And so I volunteered to record life stories in a prison, in a local prison near where I live. And they said, "Oh, great idea, Barbara, but you can't do it. We don't have the staff to monitor what you're doing and how many drugs that people put in your pocket and, you know, what sort of messages they send to people outside. So it's far too dodgy. So thank you, but no thank you." So then I thought, "Oh, well, what about a local hospice?" So I kind of dashed off an email to a local hospice and they said, "Oh, great. Come in. Come in as soon as you can." And I was still working, so I had to wait a few days and went to go along to see them. And they said, "Start tomorrow. We want you to start tomorrow." Anyway, to cut a long story short, I got into the hospice. I had all my crime checks done and I started recording. And I went into a local hospice near where I live called Princess Alice, which is in an area called Esher in Surrey. And nobody would see me.
I was there. Can't imagine.
With all my expensive equipment and all my experience. And everyone kind of took one look at me and said, "No, Barbara, with a funny name. No. We don't know who you are." And the answer's no. So I'd sit there going, drat, but what on earth shall I do? This is not the way it should be at all. So I'd hang around and I'd make tea for everybody, and I'd work in this kind of odd arts class, and, you know, just kind of hung around and made a nuisance of myself. And I used to approach more people, more patients and all the rest of it. And he kept on saying, no, Barbara, no, you've got a very strange surname. And the answer's still no. And I'd say, oh, God, what shall I do? You know, I was so frustrated. Anyway, after the third time I went in, and they could see I was going to be there all day bothering them for teas and cakes they didn't want and all the rest of it. And one of the patients said, Barbara, I feel sorry for you. You're trying so hard and you've got your equipment there. Use me. I will give you something and let's take it from there. So I was very nervous by this time. I've spent a lifetime recording people's stories as a television correspondent in war zones and famines and God knows what, and running a production company. But that was nothing compared to meeting this beautiful, beautiful lady who just felt sorry for me and wanted to tell me her story. She was facing end of life very bravely and just said, look, get on with it, you know. Don't give me any of your charitable stuff, you know, just get on with it. And I was so, so nervous. And my knees were knocking. And I couldn't operate the machinery. I just completely forgot. It was like taking an exam. I just didn't know how to operate any of it. And she was saying, you do know how to operate this equipment, don't you? I was going, yeah. Anyway, I started the recording and it went really well. And I remembered everything and it all came back. And she was my saviour. She just got me going. And when she finished, after a good 2 or 3 hours, she had a long story to tell. And she went round the patient community in the hospice and said, you know, Barbara, it's okay. So people said, well, okay. I wouldn't mind having a go, actually. And it just... incredible. I was so relieved. I was kind of beginning to get a headache and feeling really kind of but she just unveiled a kind of new world to me, and she made me feel kind of 2 inches high, but then, you know, a giant afterwards. And I felt very relieved, and after that it went really, really well. And then after a year, another patient who I'd become very, very close to, because a lot of the patients become very attached.
Mm-hmm, I understand. Yes.
And they take the mick out of what you're wearing. And I used to cycle to the hospice, and still do, in fact. And they used to say, oh, Bobby, your hair looks ridiculous. Why don't you go to the to the hairdressers one day? Or, you know, look at your socks, they don't match. Or, you know, and they just used to take the mick out of me all the time. And this one lady who I became particularly attached to said, Barbara, you do realise that this isn't the only hospice in Britain, don't you? And I said, really? How many are there? And she said, I've no idea. Go and find out. But I can tell you it's not the only one. And so that gave me the idea to actually start a charity, because having had such a difficult time, I did actually get in. And I'm now, dare I say it, very popular there. And I still obviously record there. And people... I have a waiting list of patients who want to be recorded by me, and you know, it's quite a success story. But she gave me the idea of starting a charity, and that's what I did in November 2017. And we've actually recorded 240 life stories now, and we've got into 45 different hospices, and we're training them all the time, and we've got another 160 to go. it's a big old mountain to climb, but I think so long as we can stay focused and you know, we can get the right kind of people who've got quite a lot of chutzpah, as it were, to persevere with patients who've got you know, if you're facing end of life, you do feel sometimes, I would imagine, that you're kind of up against the world. So if are approached by somebody in the wrong way, they will say, they will balk, and they'll say, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to be interrupted by you, go away, you know. But if we approach them in the right way and we have the right infrastructure, I think we'll just carry on going.
Well, as I told you in our first call, Barbara, I definitely want to help you evangelize this. And I don't know how much I told you, but I have been interested in life stories for the last 20 years. And I wanted to do something like this as well, although in a written format. And interestingly enough, I went into a retirement community and wanted to collect their stories. I was told no because of privacy issues. So I understand fundamentally what you're doing and its import. If somebody has spent their whole entire life and they get a chance to share what matters, they get to presence the points that are most pertinent to them and use those as their parting words, I can't think of a better gift to give of themselves.
You know, I've been chased down corridors in my hospice by patients' families who said, "Are you that Barbara woman?" And then they kind of chased me down, and I kind of ran a little bit, not knowing who they were. And they've said, "You know, we just want to give you a hug. We just want to give you a hug because we hear your voice on our father, brother, sisters, wives, whatever it is, audio recordings, and they're clearly having a lovely time, and they do, and so do their families." And also, so do the hospice biographers. It's hugely privileged position to be in to record somebody's life story, because you are taking a little bit of their soul.
Mm.
Because once you give everything during such a vulnerable time, you are giving something of yourself to a stranger. You know, I am a stranger to them, and I can quite understand their resistance. And so it's enormously privileged position to be in, to sit in a room with somebody to talk about such personal things. I love it. And when I get to go home, I've usually done 3 or 4. On occasions, I've done 6, but that's been the absolute maximum. Most of the time, it's either 3 or 4. And, you know, I just feel exhausted. Absolutely exhausted, and I just go straight to bed. And I'm physically exhausted because I've cycled a long way, and I feel emotionally just completely fatigued, because in order to record somebody's life story, you really do have to concentrate. You can't look at your phone, you can't answer text messages, you can't afford your eyes to wander into other areas. You've got to concentrate on that patient, because if that patient gets the slightest whiff that you are bored, you've got something better to do, they will just shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be crushed beyond your, you know, worst nightmare. So, you know, the biggest thing is to, as I've said in the first break, before the first break, was, you know, you've really got to learn how to listen to other people and to have that kind of empathy where you can understand what it's like for somebody end of life to give their life story to a complete and utter stranger, and to trust them enough to do that.
Yes, and yet one that obviously is present and cares. And didn't you also say, Barbara, I think in one of our conversations, that there's something about the voice of a person, yeah, that endures? Didn't you say something about that?
It does. It's the voice that matters. One of the things that you miss so much is to hear the voice of your loved one. And the quality of where you've recorded it, as I've told you with my father, you know, it's lovely to hear the family interruptions and the ambience of a room. It's great to hear the voice again, because obviously it just fills you with all the memories that you have of that person. I can't think of a great, you know, you might have expensive jewelry or, you know, real estate or whatever it is that you want to think of as being valuable. But actually, I think an audio recording, I think audio rather than video is just hugely, hugely precious. And obviously, it's unique.
It is. It is beautiful. And on that note, Barbara, let's grab our last break and then we'll start fresh afterwards. I'm your host, Elise Cortez. We've been on the air with Barbara Altunian, founder and trustee of the Hospice Biographers, a UK-based charity that trains and mentors specialist volunteers to record the life stories of patients across all of the UK's 200-plus hospices. She joins us today from London. After the break, we're going to hear more about how she got started and what she's learned along the way. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Dr. Elise Cortez is a management consultant specializing in meaning and purpose, an inspirational speaker and author. She helps companies visioneer for greater purpose among stakeholders and develop purpose-inspired leadership and meaning-infused cultures that elevate fulfillment, performance, and commitment within the workforce. To learn more or to invite Elise to speak to your organization, please visit her at elisecortez.com. Let's talk about how to get your employees working on purpose. This is Working on Purpose with Dr. Elise Cortez. To reach our program today or to open a conversation with Elise, send an email to Elise, A-L-I-S-E, at elisecortez.com. Now, back to Working on Purpose.
Thanks for staying with us, and welcome back to Working on Purpose. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Barbara Altunian, a BBC-trained TV and radio interviewer with more than 30 years of experience. She's also the founder and trustee of the Hospice Biographers, a United Kingdom-based charity that trains and mentors specialist volunteers to record the life stories of patients across all of the UK's hospices. She plans to expand globally. I'm your host, Elise Cortez. So, Barbara, in this last segment here, we've got maybe 15 or so minutes here. Where should we go next?
One of the things that people say to me is I've only got a recording from my loved one as it was left on her telephone answering machine, the old-fashioned telephone answering machine, or on her mobile. And it's just so awful to think that that's the only recording that they've got. So my message to you is, if I had a penny, an old-fashioned English penny, for every single time somebody has said that to me, I would be a multimillionaire.
Indeed, I know, when people can depart so quickly. But yet, I know in my case, my I would have loved to have had you interview my mother, Barbara. Both my parents died 28 days apart in January 2019. My mother's case, you could have come and done her interview because we had time. Not my father's case, because he had a stroke. But yes, what I'm hanging on to is what I remember of a conversation in the hospital. I would have much rather had you recording.
Well, I will definitely come along to the States and interview any relative who wishes me to do that in exchange for a donation, because we are a charity. But I would be very, very privileged and pleased to do that, because that is my favorite ever job in my life. I think that's why I came down to Earth, and I would be very, very keen to do that, because I love recording life stories. I think every single life is worth remembering, and everybody's got a story. And most of the stories that I find fascinating aren't stories of, you know, braving world wars, or, you know, doing the kind of headline things that you think about. It's actually the little things in life that are so fascinating about recording people's life stories. It's about how they cope with adversity. It's little things like having an argument, first argument they've ever had, when they were arguing with their best friend and their best friend broke up with them, or how they felt jealous when their brother had his marriage to his wife, and leaving the sibling behind and not paying as much attention as they used to. It's the kind of small parts of life and how they cope with it that actually are the most illuminating and insightful of recording life stories. There's actually an awful lot of learning that one can have from recording people's life stories.
I know what you mean, Barbara, because as we spoke when we first met, being a meaning in work and an identity researcher, when I would go and do interviews, and I guess I've done now close to about 150 of those recorded, et cetera, for research purposes. Yes, you learn the way that people tell their story. There's a lesson in that, and invariably there's inspiration with that. And then when it's been fascinating, because then they go back and share the transcript with their loved ones, who often go on to say, I didn't know you had that experience. I've never heard you tell that before, but it landed in the transcript.
Exactly. It's how people navigate their lives, the most illuminating part of people's life stories. And people always say to me, oh, Barbara, I've got nothing to say to you. I want you to record my life story, but I can tell you there's very little I can say. And I always say, oh, yes, okay. Well, let's just start, shall we? Where were you born? Under a table or in a hospital? Or tell me what it's all about. And they always laugh, and they start from there. And then when they start telling you the story, can I just tell you, They look through you. They don't see you anymore.
Yes.
They're giving you huge, tiny detail of the man that came to see them in their house when they were five, with hair coming out of their nose and the blue eyes matching their blue shirt. All that kind of tiny little detail. They remember in huge, huge, fascinating colour kaleidoscope. It's a joy, a real joy.
And what else strikes me too, Barbara, as I'm thinking about who would be listening to this. So this is someone who's now they're on the departed end of the person who gave you that conversation, and they want to go back and remember. I would love to come back and hear my mother tell some stories about what it was like for her to grow up. And when we were coming up as children and living on the farm and starting the restaurant and all of that, I think about, why would you want to go back to that? I want to remember. I want to be with them.
Yeah. And relatives often say to me, oh, Barbara, you know, how clever of you to have got all those stories from them. Why did they never tell us? They must love you. They must respect you more than me. And I say, oh, absolutely. And then they say, no, is that true? Is that true? I say, no, of course it's not true. It's just that I've been chronological. I'm a complete stranger, so if they say something that I don't understand, I say, oh, really? Why is that? Or what happened next? I prompt them along. They've got to explain things in greater detail because I am unknown to them.
And, exactly.
You know, and that's what it is. And of course they go, oh, well, that's all right then. You know.
But you also, like you said, though, Barbara, you come at it. I mean, who can really resist having someone sit across from them and genuinely with curiosity really want to know who you are and the life that you've led? Who can resist that?
Yeah. No, I everybody loves it. And once they get going actually, the other big thing I've got to tell you is that when they come in, a lot of patients, you know, have complaints about, you know, oh, I've got pains here and this is happening and this drug doesn't work and everything. And I say, you know, clear all that from your thoughts now. Let's just start talking about your life story. Let's start from the beginning. Da, da, da. And then what they say is, they say at the end of it, you know, I feel so good. I feel really, really good, Barbara. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. And I say, it was the greatest pleasure in the world. You know, thank you very much for sharing it. And that's what it is. You know, it makes people feel better. It's a therapy. It's not called a therapy, but it is. That's how it works. It's cathartic. It's soothing. It puts your life into perspective. It gives you a legacy to leave behind for your loved ones.
What a gift.
Precious,
right. Think about what you just said there. So listeners, I want you to pay attention to this. So the fact that Barbara experiences this work as the most precious thing, and I think what she said, what she was put on earth for, so I might call that purpose. I don't, maybe she doesn't, but, and then that she's giving the gift of the person telling the story who feels elevated and feels celebrated, and what a gift out. So when you think about, wow, what can I do in this world to make a difference, to contribute my passions and make the world a better place, that's a win, 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 win all the way around right there. That is just beautiful, Barbara.
Yeah. Well, I think it is. And it's enjoyable for everybody. You know, it is a win-win situation because I'm enjoying it, they're enjoying it, and most of all, their families enjoy it. And they just find out so much. And also, they begin to think, gosh, I'm a bit like that. And my relative, who I love very dearly, I had no idea about all this detail. And they're giving me detail, which I think has been passed on to me. So I'm going to take a lesson out of that. And I'm going to do it that way. You know, I'm getting divorced at the moment. I'm going through bankruptcy at the moment. I'm going through adversity at the moment. So, you know, I always say at the end of the interviews, now, this is the favourite part. I'm going to go and make some tea for you. And while I'm there, I want you to think about the advice you want to give to your relatives. And I want
Brilliant.
You should give them some advice. And they say, oh, I can't possibly do that. But I think, well, I'm just going to make a cup of tea and come back and see what you think. And then by the time I get back, they've written a long, long list. And they say the most extraordinary thing. They say things like, Jack, even that when I'm dead, I'm going to be able to look down on you, and I'm just going to tell you right now, I know you're only five, but I will know when you're picking your nose. I will know, and I will be telling you off.
That is delightful. Oh my gosh. And when Jack is 45 years old, he's going to love hearing that.
He's going to love hearing that. And, you know, they talk about the insights that they made and the mistakes they made. You know, they come clean on everything that they've done. And you know, if we do come across somebody whose life story does include, you know, bits that have affected other people adversely, I mean, seriously, like, oh, if the worst should happen, and it hasn't happened to us yet, but if we come across somebody who is a child sex abuser or a robber or a thief or a criminal, you know, we have to stop the recording. Mm. And we have to say, I'm sorry, but the recording ends here. This goes to social services within the hospice. And if necessary, the police will be informed. So, you know, it's not always, I've never had that, but we've got that provision laid out in our rules and regulations, and we stick by it. So, so you know, in our life stories, they're always very inspiring, but there will come a time in my life when I will come across somebody who has had a less than perfect past, and we will have problems there, and we will have to our recordings, you know, because we don't want families to ever be upset after listening to it. This mm-hmm. is a heartwarming service. It's not one where people can abuse it. So, you know, we're not silly. We're not naive. We know what we're doing.
Yeah, the numbers are there, right, Barbara? So tell me again, you said how many hospices have you been working in, and how many stories have you taken?
Well, we've now done 250.
250 stories.
250 stories, and okay. we've upped our number of hospices. And
how many again?
I think it's about 45 now.
Okay.
And, we've got, you know, another 160 to go, because there are 220 hospices. Our aim actually is to do 200, because we think that there are going to be at least 20 that we can't do. And and the other thing is that we're going to adapt our charity so that we can also do children's hospices. So we're probably going to be recording them on things they will want to be remembered. You know, there's lots of, there are two things. One is that there are dying children who've got terminal disease. There are also very, very young teenagers who've had children, but who themselves are dying. Those babies and very, very young children are going to want to be able to see their mother or their father. So we, in the future, want to expand into that area where we can record them on film. Otherwise, it's on audio, because most people prefer to be recorded on audio.
Right, especially if they're going through treatments and they're hooked up to machines and such. So, yeah. Barbara, I just got a keen insight when you just said all of this. I just really connected something important here between your work and mine. And so since my work is so much about meaning and purpose really can't work, and it doesn't work without the fact that we have a limited number of days on the planet. If we had infinite time, purpose wouldn't work, because you wouldn't have the urgency. So what I appreciate about our connection here is that I'm out to help people live their biggest, fullest, most passionate, inspired life of contribution as they possibly can, and you're there to catch their story when they finish.
Exactly. But we don't, often some of our patients are, they've got a year or so to live. We also do ward patients in hospices, which means they only have a matter of weeks to live. So there's a huge variance there. And then now during COVID, we do interviews on the phone between grandchildren and grandparents. And also we do audio interviews over the phone as an audio biography. So over COVID, we're doing it remotely.
Mm-hmm. How do you find that in relation to being in person?
It's difficult, really, because I think I've done 50 interviews now with grandparents being interviewed by their grandchildren, and the interviews are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still of value. But, you know, grandchildren ask the sweetest of questions, but they're not getting to the heart of the interview.
Right.
It's good and bad. You know, you wouldn't say one was inferior to another, but it's a totally different thing. You know, they say, Granny, you know, what's your favorite breakfast? And when was your first kiss? and you can hear the grandparent peeling with laughter because they enjoy it so much. You know, it's really, really enjoyable. So it's a very, very different interview, but that's what we've been doing since COVID.
Okay. We'll get you back to business, Barbara, because your work, the way you do it, is precious. And I know you've trained your volunteers very specifically to be able to elicit the story that you really want to celebrate. And to that end, here we are pretty much at the end of the show already, Barbara. So in, say, about a minute, what would you like to leave the listeners with?
Record your loved ones or get somebody like me to record them for you. But whatever you do, just get them on tape. Because you will be so pleased afterwards and after they die, because the most biggest thing that you'll want to hear is their voice and all their little foibles and the way they speak and the way they cough and the way they splutter or whatever it is. You know, everybody has their own way of talking and their turn of phrase. Even the adjectives and adverbs and nouns that they use are very specific to them. And, you know, they're unique. Each person's life story, each person's voice is unique. And that's what you want to remember, because that's what you love them for.
Mm. Barbara, you are a gift to the world. And I'm so grateful that Paul Skinner of, Pimp My Cause. Paul Skinner of Pimp My Cause. That's how I met you. He connected us. He knew that you were working on purpose and with passion. I thank you so much for sharing your heart, your soul, your story, and the Hospice Biographer's mission with us.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure.
Listeners, if you want to learn more about Barbara Altunian and what she and the work she and her team are doing at the Hospice Biographers, go to thehospicebiographers.com. Last week, if you missed the live show, you can always catch a recorded podcast. We were on the air with Steve Brown, previously a futurist at Intel, this time talking about his book, The Innovation Ultimatum, How Six Strategic Technologies Will Reshape Every Business in the 2020s. Next week, we'll be on the air with Dr. Herb Sennett, talking about the importance of encouragement in leadership. See you there. Remember that work is at least a third of our life, so let's work on purpose.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's program. Be sure to tune into Working on Purpose, featuring your host, Dr. Elise Cortez, each week on W4CY. Together, we'll create a world where business operates conscientiously, leadership inspires impassioned performance, and employees are fulfilled in work that provides the meaning and purpose they crave. See you there. Let's work on purpose.